This is Electric Sisterhood podcast episode number 301. Another sign of the apocalypse? Eshmom knows K-pop artists. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are back.
Sup.
I really needed that week off.
I know you did.
I was like, so tired.
Were you late tired?
I was late tired.
Did you then fire the missiles?
I did not fire the missiles.
You're supposed to fire the missiles after the nap. After being late tired.
Here's the thing. I was so late tired, I was like, fuck the missiles.
That's not how that works.
I know it's not how that works, but I made it my own kind of situation.
Apparently so.
Yeah, yeah. But see, next week I'm going to be like, oh my god, my gosh! I know you can't see that face, but it was really kind of precious. Panda saw it and she's like trying to hold back the snot, but...
There's no
snot. I'm just saying. If I can make
girls
you laugh...
Girls don't snark.
Make Oh, no. Snot. Yes, they do. I'm going to own it right now. I have laughed so hard before that I've blown snot out of my nose, which made me laugh even harder because there were people around to see it.
Have you ever snorted? It's a sneeze fart.
It
looks like we're heading down this road.
Yes.
I've done it.
Who hasn't? I mean, there have been times where you're like, Oh, no.
Ow.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it happens, I own that. Now, of course, that makes the situation like 100 times more funny.
Yep.
Being that I'm a girl.
Because apparently girls don't fart.
That's what I heard on the internet, but I'm going to tell the internet right now that
But the
wrong.
Internet says that
but
girls don't
like
exist.
But it smells like popcorn when girls fart.
But girls on the internet don't exist, so why would the internet know about girls?
Girls, the only girls that exist on the internet are the ones from Shutterstock.
You really went there.
Chick-fil-A went there. Anyway!
Fuck Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A.
You know, and here's the thing about all of that.
You know it's Chick-fil-A, right?
First of all, of course I know it's Chick-fil-A. Hello, I lived in Oklahoma. Second of all, here's the deal. The only thing that I really liked about Chick-fil-A were the waffle fries.
Fuck yeah, waffle fries.
But fuck no Chick-fil-A.
Fuck that chicken. Mm-mm. I make bad chicken
in
at home.
Face. It's one of the few times that I've been like, yeah, Mayor Menino, you're a bad motherfucker. And I'm glad that somebody, not me, voted for you.
That's right, because it was Wayne. He's been in office way
before. Yeah, he's been in office before I came back in order to vote. But now, after seeing that statement that he made to the Chick-fil-A people about not letting them buy a space to put one of their Chick-fil-A's on the Freedom Trail, you know, across from
City Hall. Yes, I saw the
memo. I was like, yeah, when your thing comes up and I am an eligible voter because I'm registered in the state of Massachusetts, I'm going to vote for you. Because I heart the gays.
I heart the gays, too.
And the lesbians.
I heart the community.
This. I heart the community. I'm actually going to, I can't remember who sent it to me. It might have been Crix Lee, but she sent me a link because there's a group of people that are doing a Kickstarter to create the first LGBTA gamer convention. So they're calling it GamerCon.
Ha! GamerCon.
Yeah, yeah.
And can non-gays go?
Well, it's not that non-gays, but it would be the first one focused on highlighting indie developers who are LGBTA friendly or are actually, you know, LGBTA founded, you know, developers, definitely creating more connections for them because it's a piece of the community that I don't think is necessarily really served. I would say it's underserved, very much like the African-American community, part of the reason
Agreed.
Why we exist.
Right.
You know, so I love supporting that kind of stuff, but I think that it's a great idea to have, you know, a con that is specifically for game gamers, you know, because it's not really an avenue that you and I can really talk about with any kind of real authority.
No.
But, I mean, there's a lot of issues there, you know, as far as being a gay gamer doing online gaming. I mean, we know how strict, for instance, Microsoft is with, you know...
You can't even mention if you're gay or...
You know, so that there's that issue, I feel like, you know, it does make sense to have, you know, some kind of convention, expo, get together, even if it's just a small community thing or individual communities that do it. But I think that it would absolutely make sense to have, you know, it's just like we have, you know, anime conventions. Technically, an anime convention could be lopped into, you know, just Comic-Con, period.
I'm surprised that it's not.
But that we have separate conventions for anime and manga fans. And we have, you know, separate conventions for game developers versus players versus industry journalists. You know, it doesn't surprise me. And I should say it kind of surprises me that before this Kickstarter that Crix was telling me about, that we really haven't talked about having something like that. But I'm all for it. I think that, you know, any time that you can bring a community together and serve them in some way, it's absolutely something worth doing. You know, so I'm going to, you know, throw some money and fund the Kickstarter.
You are such a good person.
No, I think it's a cool thing to do. You know, if somebody came out and was like, we're going to make AfroCon. You know, and it's just going to be about black gamers in the community, journalists and all that kind of stuff. I would go. I'd blow out the afro. I'd get a pic.
I'd get two pics.
I would be so stereotypical. It'd be hysterical.
I would hug a watermelon, but never eat it.
I would go all Foxy Brown on that shit.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I would absolutely support it in some way. Just like we support the indie game cons and we support, you know, the big gamer cons, you know, because we're part of the bigger community. But I think that it does make sense to have some smaller niche community events that go on as well.
I agree.
You know, just like Women in Games, you know, and they have their separate events from everything else. You know, I think that it makes sense. And so, you know, I'm all for helping to support that in any way that I can. So I think that it's a great idea. I want to thank Crix for sending that my way, and you know, we'll probably put some things up on the website about it. I'll throw a link up there just in case anybody else wants to support it and check out the Kickstarter at least. But absolutely, by the way, Kickstarter is like the most amazing thing on the planet. We gotta figure out something to do a Kickstarter about.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
like that's, help us get our studio off the ground, our studio room.
Yeah, I don't know how many people want us to do the studio. Although, if we have the studio, we could do video,
we could do better video.
Well, we could do video.
Yeah, we could do video. And not just me.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll put together a Kickstarter and get the studio off and running.
It wouldn't hurt. Worst case scenario, it doesn't fund and we go about doing what we do.
Yep. Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll think it through. We'll run with it. But we have game stuff to talk about. We have nerd stuff to talk about. The first thing I actually want to talk about, I'm going to jump in and steal the mic.
From yourself.
Because I am. I'm going to steal it. Well, here's the thing. You know, I try to defer to you first more often because I feel like it's the sisterly thing to do. But then I'm like, but I really have this thing that I want to talk about. And
then
if you start talking, then I'm going to start talking about what you're talking about. And then we're going to look up and it's going to be like an hour and 10 minutes. And we're like, fuck, I didn't talk about
what I was supposed to. All right, go ahead then.
Okay, so I want to talk about, but we can talk about this one together. So I was not feeling well this week. And, you know, when I typically don't feel well, I get on the Netflix. And I'm like, well, what's left on Netflix that doesn't suck that I haven't seen? And let me watch it. And so I was bopping through, and because I had watched an episode of She-Ra, don't judge me, it was like, here are some other things that you may like. And I was looking, and they had, like, Voltron Force. And I noticed that the graphic on the front was not like the normal Voltron that I'm used to seeing. So I'm like, W's, T's, and F's. Let me check it out. So did you know that they did a new Voltron series?
No.
They did.
Is it any good?
It's kind of drawn like, in the newer animation style, so like that new X-Men cartoon that they had done a little while
ago. X-Men Evolution?
Yeah, so it's drawn in that type of style.
With the teenage Nightcrawler who wanted to go to the dance with the Black Amanda. Yes.
Yeah, that one. So it's kind of drawn in that
style. That's my favorite.
But what was really nice about the new series, Voltron Force, was that all of the elements from the original Voltron that made it Voltron were there.
Okay, because
it's newer. So it's set further in the future. So you're dealing with a futuristic area. Very kind of much like a Ben 10 type of sci-fi. Just in the sci-fi stuff that's going on. Because, again, they're off even more so in the future than they were before. So you have a lot more of an electronics feel going on as opposed to, you know, the original Voltron. There was obviously technology there, but it was more mythical in the whole how Robies came about.
Got it.
You know, they didn't really develop, you know, how a Robies happened. It was just Hagar spread some magic and then all of a sudden a flying coffin went through space.
Got it.
So this time you have a Hagar system where her magic exists and it's infused with technology. And so that's how you get a Robeast. So it makes a little more sense of how you get a robot beast. You have this mythical element that gets infused into this technological thing to create a beast that, you know, has some sentience, right? Okay. So you still have Lotor. He's reanimated by science.
He's blinded with science.
All right, cool. You still have your five lions. The lions look very good. You're like, okay, cool. They use the same pieces as far as the combining animation, so it stays the same. It's just with the new robots. So they use the same music as they did before with a little bit...
paying homage to their past.
Absolutely, which I was like, okay, that's cool. Because you know how sometimes you get these remakes and they're like, we're going to do our complete and all new thing. And you're like, no, don't fuck with the things I love. Like, literally, it's the same shot for shot. Like, you know, the arms, the lion's arms go in and retract and the arms connect. And there's like the little flash when they connect. And then the legs connect. And then you got the guy go, and I'll form the head. And the head opens up. And then he does a whole animation with... first lion, next lion, foot lion, pose. Every single time you're like, yes, that's the stuff I remember. All right, let's do this. But then they blend in some of the new stuff. So there's an academy. There's a thing that happens, and Voltron is basically banished. All the lions are banished because after defeating evidently the ultimate evil, there was some kind of attack on people, and everyone was like, fuck Voltron. And so Academy arises, the Galactic, I'm going to say Coalition, but that's not what they're called. And they basically impose almost martial law. You can't even utter the word Voltron under this general.
It's like Voldemort. You don't say it.
And so you go through, and you see this cadet who, Daniel, who's just absolutely in love with Voltron. And doesn't understand how everyone was able to change their minds. A couple of the pilots of the Lions are now teachers at the academy that these kids are going through. And a couple of the kids, a black kid, Daniel, end up on latrine duty because they violated the toilet. Yeah. And it turns out that the guy that gets them on the toilet duty is actually one of the former pilots, the Red Lion pilot, is basically recruiting them to get this medal from the general. Turns out the medal is actually the keys to the other lions. They only had keys to four of the lions because the pilot of the Black Lion, Keith, so a lot of the names are still the same. So you have Pidge, you have Hunk, you have Keith. They're just newer kids. Allura, who is still the princess, again, just in the future. You get these three cadet students, basically, who end up becoming part of Voltron Force as well in another way. And they help empower the lions. So it's a really nice meld of the stuff that I knew from the series that I loved as a kid with a new twist on it that wasn't so far outside of the original lore that I loved that it fit really well. I was really kind of surprised. I kept finding myself from episode to episode that I watched going either I was falling in love with the series or I would have an episode that was so far off track that I was like, I almost want to throw up a little bit in my mouth.
Right.
But ultimately where I ended up with is I really enjoyed it. I went through the entire 26 episodes that are on the first season. Like I said, it's on Netflix, so you can check it out, Voltron Force. But it was really actually interesting. It was a little bit deeper than the previous series that I had watched. You know, they dived a little bit into how the lions came to be and how different worlds came together to make that happen. They dived a little bit more into relationships between the new members of the Force and the existing members of the Force and the rest of the universe, which was cool. So I really enjoyed it. And I recommend for anybody who was a fan of the original Voltron, Definitely worth checking out. And like I said, if you have Netflix, it's an absolute, just add it to your queue. The first three episodes are really one story arc, to kind of give you the overall introduction. So I really like that they didn't just try to one shoot it into one 22-minute episode, but they gave themselves really an hour to get it done. Really set it up very nicely. So I really enjoyed that. Highly recommend it. Frankly, I think that Voltron Force is better than any of the later X-Men cartoons that have been done.
Are you talking about Evolution?
Yeah, I didn't really like Evolution. I didn't. Like, Evolution lost me.
Well, I only like the Nightcrawler arc anyway, but still.
Basically, okay, let me break down like this. In Voltron Force, the black kid... So everyone has these Volcoms, right, which are bracelets, and the Volcom basically identifies your fighting style, your ability, and then it gives you a weapon based off of where your vulnerabilities are to help you balance out as a decent fighter. So the girl, who's Allura's niece, so she's also royalty, ends up getting a staff that forms into any... physical kind of weapon that she needs. So it can be it can be an axe, it can be a staff, it can be nunchucks, whatever. Daniel gets these claws that basically let him climb, jump, and move fast. Black kid, whose name is escaping me right now, I don't know why.
Tyrone.
Xavier or some shit like that, I don't know. When he gets his assessment, his Volcom breaks, he thinks. And so he's like, well, everybody else gets a thing and they can fight, but I can't fight. Well, as it turns out, it's not that his Volcom breaks. His thing is that he is for lack of a better term, he's a terminal. He actually has the ability, like Allura, to communicate with her father. He has the ability to communicate with the ethereal and manifest connections through him to the lions. So much so that one of his abilities is the ability to allow other configuration forms for Voltron. So they learn that with him on board and connected to the robots, instead of the black lion always being the head, the red lion can be the head, or the blue lion can be the head, or the yellow lion can be the head. And when they have these different configurations,
the Voltron can do different things.
Voltron can do different things and can form different weapons. So instead of the blazing sword being formed, for instance, when the yellow lion, Hunk, is the head, he forms maces. So he can do massive, devastating construction. When Pidge is the head, because his clan are mostly technical ninjas, Voltron actually gets a face mask so you can only see his eyes. He has ninja blades out the back and has a spinning attack and a shield and a katana. You know. And so when the red lion is the head, he uses guns because he's a sure shot and he's fast. So different configurations allow for Voltron to act in different ways. So it's not always the same slice down the middle and that's how I destroy the enemy. And so it allows you to kind of focus on some of the other lions as well in battle and the other, letting the other characters take the lead, which is something that really didn't happen a lot in the original Voltron. Like, you had a couple of conflicts where, you know, they had more than a couple of one-liners, but in this series, they definitely do take the
lead
off.
They really take a protagonist stance.
Yeah. Like, there's one episode where Hunk is like, look, you know, everybody else in the group is bonding with the new cadets, but not me. And so it turns out that Allura's like, well, we can fix that. Why don't you take a day where you teach them? And so you have Hunk, who, you know, maybe in the entire series had 30 lines, gets the entire episode to interact with the kids and teach them teamwork. Because, you know, Hunk has just always been a team player.
Right.
That kind of thing. So it was really ultimately enjoyable. I'm glad that I watched it. I don't know when the second season will be available, if there is even a second series, because I don't even know what TV station this was airing on, but I hope that there is, because it was really quite interesting to me. The way that the last episode went off, it looks like it was being set up for the next season. So I'm curious to see what it is. The only thing that I kind of like I said, I would have moments where I wanted to throw up in my own mouth, was that the one thing that just didn't fit to me was the opening theme.
Okay.
Which is done by Swizz Beatz.
What?
Yes. So all of a sudden, this, like, ghetto booty blaster, like, song comes on. You're like, bold, troll, bold. And it's like, and it's, you know, it's a typical Swizz, like, 808. So you're like,
that,
what am I
that
watching?
That's bothersome to me.
Like, huh? Yeah. And I was like, woo, it does not compute. So, yeah. There was that. That was kind of like, so I found myself like immediately after the first time listening to it, like that was the first thing I would fast forward through. That's the thing. I was like, all right. And I got really good at identifying what the last slide of the song was before they got into the episode. So I had it down to a science of when to stop the fast forward to get in there. So that's my Voltron thing. I have a couple other things to talk about, but what's on your deck? What's on your plate? What's on your mind? What you thinking about, Panda?
Whoa. Okay.
I had beer.
Yeah, I know.
Beer. It's a really good one, too.
Believe it or not, I'm going to actually kind of stay on the anime front really fast since we, since you inspired the conversation
I
to happen.
I inspire anime conversation.
You just inspire, period.
Aww. There you go. Brownie points for Panda.
I know how to work that one.
Yep. You need the brownie points because you didn't get a freaking Friday out. But go ahead.
I know.
Lazy ass. Go ahead.
Sorry. Anyway, so a while ago, I know we were talking about an anime that we both were kind of watching, Excel World.
Ah, yes, Excel World.
Which has taken a very interesting turn into its middle.
So how far along are you? Because I've seen them all.
How'd you see them all?
No, all the ones that have been published.
Oh, then we're probably at the same thing.
Okay.
So, hopefully, so you guys are following along with us, and if you're not, I'm going to warn you now.
I'm just going to say this right now, the last episode that I watched pissed me the fuck off. Go ahead.
The last episode that I watched, we have seen our main character lose his wings, and he's going through this whole, oh my god, I'm worthless because I don't have wings. And he always meets up with this particular avatar, the one on the bike. And they, like, duel, and they're fighting, and, you know, because...
So, it's the last episode that you watched where he just got the ability to fly back?
Yes.
Because I've watched the one after that.
Okay. I shouldn't say that, because the way that the episode ended, he's gotten to the back on top of the tower through, you know, learning the whole perception and...
Wait, you really saw when he got back to the top of the tower?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I've seen the two episodes after that.
Okay.
You got some catching up to do, girl.
It's not on thing on Hulu Plus.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Where do you think I watched them? Both of them.
Whatever. Regardless.
I'm just saying.
So, and...
Catch up.
And they've revealed, because, you know, he lost his wings, so he was going through that whole, oh my god, I'm worthless, to my Legion Master, and... The bike guy brings him to this chick whose avatar is in a chair.
Yes.
And we see the reveal of her in real life also.
Yes.
At the end of that. That's the last episode where we see the reveal of her.
Okay, so then you are one episode behind me then.
Okay.
Not two.
So, and I love the fact that she
gave
has,
him the thing.
Yeah, she gave her wings, her thing to him. Yes, but he hasn't learned to use it yet.
Oh, yeah, he has.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's not like a learn. He knows how to use it. It's a jetpack.
Oh, okay. So,
but it only lasts for as long as your desire to fly is. It has a gauge.
Oh, all right. So, but I like the fact that, you know, this new character, for one, kind of, you know, looks like the polar opposite of, what's her name? Kurohime. Like, she's got lighter brown hair, but kind of same stature and... No, so you could see how they could possibly be friends, but my mind is stirring because, you know, she talks like, you know, this is my friend and I want to help her out, but, you know, Kurohime's never really mentioned her ever. And
she has. She's mentioned a friend that she lost because of a decision.
A decision made, yeah. Well, but I'm worried that she's going to fall, like, this new chick, Skyraker, is going to, like, totally fall in love with what's
her
name, too.
She
like,
is.
She's already kind of getting that, you know, gentle, I want to take care of you, I'm going to help you deal. And I'm like, uh-oh.
He's so sweet, though. How could you not love him?
Like, but now he's going to have two really hot chicks and then, like, best friend.
He's in love with Kurohime.
I think he's conflicted between Chiyo.
Yeah, he has feelings for Chiyo, but he is total. Trust me, when you watch this next episode, he's totally in love with Kurohime.
Okay.
He's in love with her.
I figured
like
that
he has
would...
feelings for Chiyo and their friends, but he's in love with Kurohime. I think Chiyo is in love with him.
Yes.
And I think Taku's like, I know she loves him, but yeah, I love her.
But he loves her. It's like Midsummer's like Dream. Everybody's in love with somebody else. With the exception of Kurohime is only in love.
With him. Yeah. But anyway, I've been watching that. I hate the second opener. And that's the reason why I brought it up.
Yeah.
Because you brought the whole music. Yeah, I don't like the second opening song. Yeah,
they should have stayed with the first one because I really don't like it. I know it features Kurohime more, but I don't really like it.
I don't like it.
Not at all.
It makes me sad.
Makes me sad in the pants.
So now that I've gotten the sad out, I'll deliver some happy. Now that you
got sad in the pants out?
Yeah. So the sadness is out of my pants. Go ahead. Eat a Triscuit.
I'm going to put a Triscuit right in my mouth
right now. I'm watching you. And there it goes. And it's gone. Big mouth. Anyway, so I got some Resident Evil 6 news.
Ooh!
Because we all know where I sit with the Resident Evil world.
In front of your TV.
In front of my TV, on my 3DS, because I have Mercenaries. Really? And Revelations.
Really?
Yes.
Did your Revelations box spell it right or wrong?
It was wrong. It was spelled incorrectly. So that's how Capcom does it sometimes.
Hey, you know?
Sometimes it's Revelations. Revelations.
Revelations.
But anyway, so...
Sometimes you need to have a revelation about the game and the franchise.
Oh, and the franchise.
And the franchise.
Anyway, so they were talking about how Ada Wong is going to be... she will have her own playable campaign in the upcoming...
Who's Ada Wong?
Okay, so...
Remember, I don't play those games, so you have to, you have to talk to me as if I was tarded.
Okay, so you know how so far in the Resident Evil games there's always been main dude and main chick?
Yes.
Okay, so Ada is a random chick who's kind of pursuing her own goal, so she doesn't have a resident dude counterpart like Jill and Chris and, you know, Leon and Claire.
Right.
She kind of just comes in and she fucks shit up, mostly around the Leon-Claire period. So, like, she was doing stuff while they were doing stuff. So, they've intersected. So, there's always been this dichotomy between Leon and Ada because he's always kind of come across her. And she's always had information that he's been looking for. So, like, he's always been kind of cat and mousing her.
Okay.
A bit. You actually think that she's dead for a while, but then she shows up in the horrible games like Dead Aim and, an Outbreak. Horrible games.
Just woosa, woosa.
Slimy and nasty. Mm-hmm. But she makes an appearance in 6. And they mention her in some of the textual stuff in 5.
Okay.
But you don't see her in 5. You never encounter her in 5.
Okay.
But you do not only encounter her in 6, but you will get a campaign where you can play as her. Or there's also another mode that they're talking about, which will allow the player to be a zombie, which you don't think anything big about that because if you played Operation Raccoon City or Operation Don't Spend Your Money on it,
Operation Don't Spend Your Money,
being a zombie doesn't seem all that awesome, right. but they've changed it, and I'm going to explain a little bit about that.
Here we go.
But right off the bat in Resident Evil 6, you don't get the option to play the story campaign mode as a chick. You either get to play as Leon, Chris, or Jake. Once you've completed the campaign as,
Well, but isn't that because typically the setup in these games, like, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're always trying to find the chick.
Somebody's always trying to find somebody.
Or, you know, find out who killed the chick, or who kidnapped the chick.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people didn't like 5, because you had your chicks. And then you were finding another chick, so now you're just being fucking greedy. Like, you have this hot black chick in 5 who's like, we're brothers till the end, or, you know, we're partners. And he's all like, yeah, I'm trying to find this blonde bitch. Yeah. Help me with that.
I mean, I know you're down for me or whatever, but I gotta find this other chick, cause...
But you can roll with me, cause, I mean, you can hold my shit.
I mean, you can hold my shit or whatever, but I'm looking for this bitch over here.
Yeah, grab that bow and staff.
In the day with a flashlight.
Yeah. But, so yeah, regardless, but... And that's not really what's going on, because shit has literally just hit the fan in 6. Like, there are so many different outbreaks in several different countries. Like, you're all over the place. Because Leon, I believe, is, like, in Tokyo.
Okay.
Chris is on another continent. And I think Jake is also in Tokyo, but on the other side of it or whatever. Because, I mean, you know, Tokyo is kind of a big, you know,
Japan is not a small place.
No, not at all.
I mean, on a map, it looks like it's small. But yeah. It's not small.
It's not, no.
Not if you're trying to cover it by foot.
Damn right.
If you, I mean, unless you're Godzilla, and then.
But I mean, even then, it's still.
I mean, it's still like a day's walk.
It's a decent walk for Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah.
But regardless,
Mothra not so much. Mothra can cover Japan.
Yeah. But whatever.
Just saying. Throwing it out there.
But you have to complete the campaign. And I believe you have to complete all three.
The campaign.
Yeah, you have to complete all three. So you, and I was already pissed because I'm like, I wanted to play the chick going into this game. And I was like, I can't. I'm like, so that means I have to play fucking Chris, who's already punched a boulder in an active volcano and is still alive. Fuck that.
I remember when you were talking about him punching rocks in volcanoes.
Not a rock, a boulder.
I'm sorry.
But, no. All right, tangent back to five for a second.
Tangent back to five for, like, 1 minute.
So, Chris Redfield, you know, God who walks the earth.
That's why he can punch a rock in a volcano.
Can punch a boulder in an active volcano, but needs his black bitch to help him open a door.
Well, because he's not good with the simple little things, because he's a god.
Punch rock.
Okay. Alright, it's like the Hulk. The Hulk can punch a dude in his face and block his face, like, to the back of his head. But he's got such big hands, he can't turn a little knob.
Fuck that noise. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Anyway. No, sorry. Active volcano.
I mean, but here's the thing. What we're just trying to say is he's a badass. He just doesn't have the common sense that God gave a rock.
Apparently, the rock that he let Chris Redfield punch in an active volcano. Anyway, now we're going back to six. So we get to play I Punch Boulders, Chris. We get to play I've Saved the President's Daughter, Leon. Oh, don't get me started on Leon. Do not get
Zombies
me started.
Zombies coming up the hill right now. You ain't got time to make a profile.
Zombies killed your parents. But no, like, and don't get me wrong, I mean, the franchise is built on a lot of these core characters. I mean, Jill got her own game, 3, and totally rocked it all and got rid of Nemesis in a miniskirt. So, I mean, as much crap as I've given Jill over the time, I have to respect her skills.
She got rid of Nemesis, dude. I don't even know who
that is,
but in a
miniskirt and never
impressive.
Pissed herself. And we never saw up her skirt, because that's not what it was about.
That's impressive. Come on.
It's all well.
For a game.
It's all
You didn't get a panty shot, really, the whole game. That's impressive right there.
You
gotta give the chick credit.
I don't overly hate her as much as I used to.
Okay, good.
But...
Because we're not about to
But Ada has always kind of been, you know, the rogue on the outside of stuff, observing...
And looking in, right?
Yeah. And, you know, not necessarily bad, but not necessarily good either, because, you know, she might be hired by the wrong person, find out that she's learning stuff she shouldn't know, and then, you know, they decide to go and get rid of her and stuff like that. So she's always had information that could be good for Leon, but bad for her to know about, because it always put her in a bad place and in danger a lot.
Okay.
Most of the time she took care of it herself, but there were a few times where Leon totally had to come in and save the day.
Okay.
And that's bound to happen. But I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with her campaign. I really wish she was part of the initial lineup, but, you know, I know they gave Leon a new chick companion, and her name's Helena
Harper. Now, is she on disc, or is this going to be DLC?
From the sound of the release that I read this from, it is on disc, but you just have to complete...
Well, then that means that probably at some point in time they'll make it DLC that you can purchase and just unlock.
Maybe. But I mean, if you...
Because that's what they tend to do, is like, here's a code that you can use to unlock, this is a play... I like Catwoman, okay? Catwoman was, if you got the pre-order of the Batman game, you could play the Catwoman thing. And then 2 months later, like, and here's the thing.
Yeah, so I'll probably do that. But I mean, I'm planning, because obviously playing these 3 different characters, one, puts you in 3 different places.
Oh, you're going to even play I Punch Boulders, boy?
I have to. Because I go...
Your face right there was precious.
I'm an achievement whore when it comes to Resident Evil.
True that.
Like, and it took me forever, because I mean, going back to 5, I played the game on all the difficulties in Sheva first. And to get all of the achievements you had to complete the campaigns.
I know, we were supposed to play that together.
And it never happened, I know.
It never happened.
Sorry. You wouldn't have liked it anyway, so I don't feel that bad.
I kept dying. I died trying to get out of the camp.
Which camp?
When you start the game.
Oh.
I couldn't make it out the door. Zombie killed me.
That's what they do.
I know.
But anyway.
Zombie killed me.
It's like, some more Resident Evil 6 news.
Oh!
As they announced a mode.
A mode?
Yes.
Edna mode?
A mode.
Sorry.
A commode mode. I'm just kidding. It has nothing to do with shit, really. So, if you are a fan of games like Demon Souls, Dark Souls,
No.
You weren't? That's all right. There's a lot of people.
I have room for, you know, one punishment game in my collection. For me, it's Ninja Gaiden.
Right. We've had that discussion. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Because it's a punishment game. So you get punished for sucking.
Ninja Gaiden. This mode is essentially going to kind of give you that, I think. And it's called the Agent Hunt mode. Mm-hmm. And what this will do, you have to complete the campaign as either of the three. So you don't have to complete it
all three times. You just have to complete the campaign once.
And you have to turn it on. Like, it's a setting that you can turn on to turn on the
Almost agent. Like a cheat that you would unlock. So you have to enable it.
Yeah, you have to enable it. But I wouldn't call it a cheat because it could end up potentially...
Well, I'm not saying that's a cheat. I'm saying it's like a cheat. That once you achieve this, you get the ability to enable this. Yeah.
And what it will allow you to do is if you enable it and you turn it on... you have the ability to turn yourself into a hunter, using air quotes. And I don't think it's the hunters like we've seen in Resident Evil games, because those hunters, one, were like green frog mutants that, if you got too close to them, they could lop off your head and it was an instant kill. They suck in tight places. And they always put them in long hallways, so you're always kind of like, fuck. But whatever. Anyway, and when you're a hunter...
If they're a frog, can't you just shoot them?
No, because they're like big, like humanoid... frogs with, like, Freddy Krueger nails. And if you got too close, then they could lop. And they did, too. They weren't the kind of like, oh, oops, no. The minute they could chop off your head, they did. Especially if you had your back turned to them, so you always kind of wanted to be watching them. But anyway, when you enable the hunter mode, if you can either open it so that other people who are accessing the hunter mode can enter into your campaign as a zombie of some kind and aim to take you out. And kill you in your campaign. So now your single player mode that you're surrounded by NPCs and you can
learn. You're not necessarily surrounded by NPCs
anymore. Now there's a real potential live threat in your game.
Oh, see, that both excites me and pisses me off because that means my friends could pop into my game as a zombie and take me out.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, assholes. I bet you there's an achievement for doing that. There is too.
So it's going to entice a whole lot of people to become dicks. Just like Demon's Souls did with the Red Phantoms. Granted, some people, you know, came into a game, and I mean, the great thing about Demon's Souls was, even if you came in as a Red Phantom, you could kill stuff around the actual, you know, when you had your body, and unless you engaged in fights, if you killed something near them, that person absorbed the souls. So, like, I had a couple encounters with some Red Phantoms who were very nice and killed all the things, and then threw themselves off the side of the building, and it counted as me killing them, because that's how that system worked. I don't know if that's going to be the case in this new Agent Hunt mode, but I do like the idea that, you know, because some people get way too comfortable in their campaigns.
Right, because they know exactly where the NPC is going to turn, because I've played it so many times.
But now that might not be the case anymore.
Because what you thought was an NPC is now actually one of your friends.
Yep.
That'll lock
me. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be one of those things where they come in and obviously the game has to let you know in some fashion that something's entered your game.
But that doesn't happen all the time because that was one of the things that drove me nuts about. What game was it?
Because, I mean, Demon's Souls was good about saying, you know, a black red phantom has entered your world.
Gears. Flash. When I didn't turn off the let your friends jump in, there were times that I'd be playing and all of a sudden, like, one of my friends had taken over one of my player characters, and you know, when I don't know that I'm playing with people, I don't keep my headset plugged in because there's no reason for me to have a headset.
Right.
Unless I'm playing late night and I don't want to keep anybody in the neighborhood up. And so all of a sudden I'd see like one of my NPCs just jumping up and down and jumping up and down in the area, and I'm like, why is the NPC doing that? And then I would realize because I would look over and think, and be like, oh shit, it's one of my friends. And they were pointing to something that they wanted me to get from or shoot down from or some shit like that. And I'm like, when the fuck did you get in my game?
Yeah. Well, some games have it implemented better than others. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there isn't any footage of it yet, so I don't know how
I still have achievements in Gears 3 that I need to get.
I'm missing two collectibles, but I'm not...
I'm missing collectibles. I don't think I've got the completed with four people.
Oh, you gotta get on that.
Because I'm missing a couple of episodes that I haven't completed with other people.
But regardless, I was enticed and intrigued by this new element that they're going to put into the Resident Evil 6 game. It also makes me a little hesitant because we are still pandering to the action-adventure side, and it's not very survival. This brings back an element of survival horror for me because now you're not dealing with a calculated mind of an NPC. You're actually dealing with a tactful human
mind. Here's the thing, though. I don't think that you'll see Resident Evil go back and turn into a complete survival horror. I don't think that you'll see anything that is just a complete survival horror, except for that zombie game on the Wii U.
The Zombie U.
Like, that's the only thing that I've seen for quite some time that, to me, has just screamed pure survival horror.
Well, I mean, I know that Bethesda, the Tango Gameworks, are working on a survival horror with Shinji Mikami.
And that thing screams pure survival horror.
Yeah, because going back to the basics.
But, you know, as far as, like, in the immediate term.
Yeah. The only things we'll see that will sit in there are going to be
action.
Yes,
and more on the thriller side.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, thriller action appeals to a larger chunk of the gamer base than pure survival horror. As an example, I have no intentions of buying any Resident Evil game.
I know you don't.
Okay? It's not my bag. All right? There's more of me in the gamer community than there is of you.
Sadly.
But
we need more me's.
Well, all I'm saying is, as far as ensuring commercial success, you have to pander a little bit to the largest piece of the base while still staying true so that enough of your niche and
still respect you.
Exactly. So you will still have, you know, like with the zombie piece, is more of a, here's the bone that we can throw to our purists. But as far as reaching the majority of the base, we've got to make it more action with a scary element than survival horror with an action element.
Yeah.
Because they have a better chance of getting me to at least purchase the game if they do the first thing than if they do the second thing.
Probably.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, for those guys, it's about making the money. Okay, it doesn't matter if they make a beautiful survival horror game if only 100,000 people buy it. They don't make back the money they invested on building the game.
That's
so you got to remember, to make that kind of game, you're looking at an investment of at least $100 million. They got to make that money back and then some.
Yeah, you're
otherwise
right.
It's a failure. So how do you do that? You got to appeal to the biggest piece of the base.
It makes me sad.
Just saying, but business, it's a bitch.
But regardless, but it's coming. So, I mean, it's got some new high elements that I'm really looking forward to. And I'd like to see some more survival horror back into the Resident Evil franchise. But it probably isn't going to happen.
Probably not.
But that's where I'm sitting right now.
Okay.
What else do you have, sis?
I have a couple of other pieces. So, one of the things, you know, we've talked about the Tomb Raider game
a billion times over.
Well, not a billion times over, but we've talked about it
a bajillion times.
We're going to talk about it a bajillion more times because there's a lot of time between now and March 5th.
Agreed.
When the game comes out. So, one of the things that we know about, but we actually really haven't talked about to this point, and I figured, well, damn, let's go ahead and talk about it, was the voice of the new Lara in this game was announced, Camilla Luddington, which I know her because I had seen her on Californication. And so when I first heard the name, I didn't quite make the connection. Mm. And then when I saw it, I was like, wait, that's What's-Her-Face from Californication. She doesn't have an English accent, but then I realized in doing, you know, some of my research that she actually does have a British accent. It's when she does American shows and American PR, she drops her accent so she can be
That's
understood.
That's the same thing as the guy from Torchwood, the guy who plays Captain Jack Harkness.
Sure.
He's actually Scottish, but he learned an American accent, and whenever he does interviews, he has his accent. But if he's ever talking to someone who's Scottish, his brogue slowly comes back.
Yeah. So, Camilla's the same way, but what I think is very interesting is that there are elements now in looking at Camilla and looking at the new Lara where I can obviously go, oh, they were actually inspired by how Camilla looks to make Lara kind of look like that. Like in her face, if you look at Camilla, like in her cheekbones, Lara has the same type of cheekbones. You know, she is very sweet and very funny. She was at Comic-Con and she did a bunch of interviews. Which I thought was cool, but I like her voice, and I like her voice for young Lara, which is really cool. I think it's a very good fit. You know, I thought that the woman who did the voice for Lara in Underground did a very good job. And I was a little bit nervous about, you know, the voice for a young Lara, because you've got to get someone who can sound young but also have a little bit of gravitas, because I always feel like Lara at any age should have a little bit of that.
Right.
And she does. She does a really good job of delivering that. So it's just really cool to see the community embracing Camilla, and to hear her talk, like, a couple of the interviews that she did for, I should say, at San Diego Comic-Con, and talking about how, you know, she thought that she was going to be walking into Lara doing her badass thing and just, you know, kicking ass, taking names, and then walking out. She was actually really surprised, and pleasantly so, to find out that she was going to be doing Lara at the younger age, where she's developing into
her
that
survival
person.
Instinct, yeah, and her skill.
She really was like, I had to actually, you know, bring a real character to life as opposed to just continue an existing character, and that was really exciting to me. And so it was really cool to hear that, you know, because a lot of times when I think of people doing voice acting, I imagine someone going, all right, well, here's an even, you know, easy $7.50 that I can make per week. Hear my lines. I'm going to throw a little bit of motion behind it. Boom, I'm done. But to really see more and more Hollywood-trained actors being brought in to bring these characters to life, I think that's part of the reason why we've seen such a, at least in my opinion, raising of the bar of character development and deliverables in video games. You know, you look at the last year and the games that have really created, you know, fanatical responses and developed fanatical communities have all been games that have had and invested really well in not only the storytelling, but the actors behind the voices, like your Uncharted and your God of Wars and your Demon Souls and, you know, now your Tomb Raiders and, you know...
I wouldn't necessarily even say Demon Souls, but I mean, when I think strong character development with strong actor ties, I'm thinking like L.A. Noir.
Oh,
I'm
definitely.
I'm thinking Heavy Rain. I'm thinking the female and male Shepherds, even though the appearance were different, they still had to hold a character.
Absolutely.
Regardless. And I mean, we're going to see that even more so when Beyond Two Souls comes out, where we're going to see Ellen Page, you know,
taking that to a whole new level. I think that what Quantic Dream is doing is really now blurring the line completely between movie, video game, and cinematic interaction.
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like that's more of a cinematic interaction thing happening
I feel like they set a bar for themselves with Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need to match that and surpass it. Without, you know, delving... Because, I mean, Heavy Rain was a very real situation. Like, it wasn't...
Heavy
Rain
is the reason why I can't have kids.
That's another reason why you don't have
I'm going to tell people right now that
that's a lie. You lie.
It heavily factors into it. I couldn't do a second playthrough of that game. I was traumatized.
Like, you didn't even get into the downloadable content.
I didn't get into the download. Well, my Madison died.
If your Madison had lived, her downloadable content, like, apparently throughout her story, she's encountered, like, 4 serial killers who were all trying to somehow rope her back into killing her again. So, that guy who, you know, the one that you let kill her, like, that's only, I think that's, like, the second one she encounters. So, like, she just has bad luck.
So,
Madison.
I could not play that game through a second time. Like, my husband was like, you're not doing that. You're not doing that.
No, but
I had to lend it out to a friend of mine because I couldn't even keep it in my house because I was so messed up by that game. I would go into work. And at the time, I was working in a marketing department of another company. And my boss came over to my desk and was like, are you upset? Something's wrong. You're not yourself. And I was like, I can't let my son down. Like, that's the first thing that came out of my mouth. Like, I had my headphones on. I was working, and he asked me the question. I was like, I can't let my son down. He goes, what are you talking about? You don't have kids. I was like, no, I've been playing this game, and I have to save my son because I wasn't able to save my first son. And I'm like, and
it's like, I already kind of fucked up with son number one.
I was like, last night I had a dream about when I lost my first son. I was like, and it was, like, so vivid. Like, it was, like, I was in there. And he goes, what are you talking about? So I showed him the trailer for the game. And he's like, there's no way I could play this game. He's like, that's not a game. That's just fucked up. I was like, I know. It's fucked up. I'm like, but I have to save my son.
I'm just getting,
I couldn't save
Jason. Ninja, we know.
I know, but I still feel bad that I
know. That's all right, because I did. I saved Sean.
You didn't save Jason.
No.
No one saved Jason.
No.
Everyone lost Jason.
Yes.
I saved Sean.
I saved Sean.
But I couldn't save Jason.
Well, you just gotta love Sean as much as you would have loved both your sons. That's what I do. But anyway.
Without my finger.
Whoa. Yes, don't.
I cut it off. I cut it off. There was no fucking way. I was gonna save Sean.
I did it all the ways, so I don't want to hear it.
That's because you're a badass. I couldn't do it. I was so emotionally invested. I could not play that game.
But I'm just saying, they raised their bar.
And I, like, took my hat off. I was like, you guys fucking got me.
You know, but like I said, they were playing with a strong, real element. Like, they were not playing with, ooh, I'm a mystical thing with magical power. Like, they didn't do that. They played it straight. They played it real, which is why it was so impactful. Mm-hmm. And granted, even though Beyond Two Souls does have this air of mysticism, you know, with this Aiden and this whatever this is, they are still playing it entirely straight.
Look, I'm going to be honest. I am probably going to take time off to play that game. I'm going to tell you right now. When the game comes out, I'm probably taking a day, maybe two, off to play it.
I will be bringing my PS3 down to the second floor so that Eshmom can pop her popcorn and watch, because I know she's going to want to watch
that. She's
going to
do that. She's going to watch that.
It's going to happen.
Just like
as soon as she sees that.
Just like God of War. We're going to have to take some time. I'm thinking like on a Friday, and we're just going to have to marathon it.
We're just going to have to do it. But I think we're on the precipice with our games now, where that blurred line is going to become more and more mainstream. It's going to happen. It's the future of gaming. It's all going to essentially look and feel like that.
Well, I mean,
that,
you know,
I mean,
this translates, you know, this segues, I should say, very well into the next thing I was going to talk about, which is, you know, earlier this week, Bethesda announced the people who are going to be doing the cast, basically, for Dishonored.
So who do we got?
Well, I'm really excited about Dishonored. We talked a little bit about it at E3.
Yep, and I got to sit with Bethesda and actually see some gameplay of Dishonored.
And I got to sit in on it well, and I was just completely floored. I loved how they allowed the people who were QA and beta testing the game to come up with new ways of moving around. And so, you know, being able to be treated to the two different ways you could solve the same puzzle was really
options.
Cool.
You have them.
So just to give you an idea. Susan Sarandon.
Oh, really?
Yep. Is gonna be, providing a voice. Brad Dourif, who is, in The Lord of the Rings and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay.
Is gonna be in there. Carrie Fisher.
Nice!
Yep, providing a voice. John Slattery from Mad Men.
I would do naughty things to him.
Michael Madsen. Is going to be doing a voice in there. Kill Bill, Reservoir Dogs, Crazy, Mike Madsen. And Lena Headey, who was in 300 and Games of Thrones, is going to be producing stuff. So Susan Sarandon is going to be this crazy street woman.
Sarandon, how the mighty have fallen.
Dourif is going to be play the role of the inventor Piero. Who basically is going to create the mask that you wear as Corvo. Carrie Fisher is going to be the voice of all of the government propaganda and broadcasting stuff.
Okay.
That goes through the speakers in the city of Dunwall. John Slattery is going to do the role of, what's his name? Admiral Havelock. He's a guy who's going to help Corvo, and Michael Madsen is going to do the role of Dodd, who's another assassin. Chloe Moretz, who was in Kick-Ass and Hugo.
Oh!
Portrays the Empress's daughter, who's kidnapped.
Girl.
Yep.
Nice.
And Lena Headey is going to be Callista, Emily's caretaker. And then they talked a little bit about some people who are going to be working on the cast. The audio is going to be amazing. The guys that worked on the score for Dexter and a couple of other shows are are going to be contributing, and you can already kind of get the feel of what that's going to be by looking at some of the videos. It's just really cool to me, just to see how much effort's, like, being put into these games. You know, and Dishonored's right around the corner. It's coming out on, like, October 9th.
Yeah.
Like, this October's going to be ridiculous. You want to talk about broke bitch November.
I think
it's... I mean, it's going to be broke-ass holiday. Like,
broke-ass
starting
autumn.
From October. Like, seriously.
Yeah. Rice Fallout, and beans for all.
Assassins.
Fallout.
It's not Fallout. Far Cry 3.
Thank you. I was about to say, like, Fallout?
No, no. Far Cry 3. Assassins 3.
Right.
Fucking...
Borderlands 2.
Borderlands 2. Fucking Dishonored. Dance Central 3. I mean, fuck me. Broke.
Fuck us.
Seriously.
But I mean, I think...
Do you know how many collector's editions that is?
A lot.
That is like a lot of collector's editions.
I agree. No, but I think we are neglecting to really just assess why all of a sudden we're seeing a stronger emphasis in terms of...
Because it's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Well, yes, that. I mean, that's the obvious elephant in the room. But, you know, actors don't stay young forever, so they can't stay in movies forever unless they're gonna, you know, play opposite...
well, I think you finally...
Steve Martin in cheaper by the dozen six.
17.
We've got puppies now.
there are puppies in this bitch.
Yeah. And, I mean, they still have a lot... There's a lot of vitality in a voice, no matter how old you are. So, I mean, voice acting is definitely something I think a lot of actors should really...
It's a little bit easier work. And I think the reason why we see this shift is video games are finally going from being that thing... that was just a hobbyist thing and it was an underground thing to being mainstream. And becoming mainstream, you now have access to better talent.
Yeah, okay? I would say so.
I would say that, you know, part of the reason why we don't have, like, a real distinct voice for Mario is because at the time that Nintendo was coming out with the game, they wouldn't have been able to pull, let's say, a Bob Hoskins or a...
I don't think Mario should have had a...
No. But what I'm saying is, part of the reason why he doesn't is because it wasn't an option at the time. If you think about it.
Right.
When Mario came out. Like, how were you going to go and pitch to an established Hollywood actor that they should spend the time to become the voice of this character, which you were pretty sure was going to be an iconic character for you, which meant 25, 30, 50 years of... voice work.
True.
How are you going to...
I mean, granted, they were smart, like, with the whole Tinkerbell. Like, they already knew, ideally, who they wanted, but they had to wait for her to grow up a little bit. And now you can't get Tinkerbell to shut the fuck up.
No, that bitch just be running her mouth.
Well, if you were quiet for most of your life,
I would have a lot of things to say. Yeah. But it wouldn't be anything you could put on, like, a video game or a TV show or a cartoon for the children.
I'm just saying, so...
But I... You know, for me, it's just reassuring for me as a gamer, and then for me as somebody that, you know, observes and analyzes the industry, to see the dramatic trend over, you know, just 3 years ago of the caliber of voice work that you're getting. You know, just like with ADV and things like that, you pretty much knew who was going to be doing the voice of any major lead male action hero in a video game if there was going to be voice, because there were five guys everyone was
Nolan doing. North.
Nolan North was probably going to do it, and if it wasn't Norm, then it was going to be the Dom Father, and if it wasn't Carlos Ferrero, you had the five. You had the stable. Okay, and now it's like, well, you could get John Goodman.
True.
You could get Bridges. You could get Colin Firth. You could get, I mean,
Bruce Willis.
You could get anybody, almost. Because the stories are just as compelling that the actors are interested in bringing those characters to life. Like, Ellen Page is interested in bringing that character in Beyond Two Souls
to
life.
She was so interested in doing this game that they physically went and changed what Ellie looked like. Because she looked a lot like Ellen Page, and everyone was speculating that Ellen Page was playing Ellie. And no... She was doing her own games. Like, we gotta change what she looks like so people can stop being confused and shit. So,
yeah.
That's right. It does open up a new plethora of doors for established,
you know,
trained professionals.
Really, and then that just adds to the storytelling element that just brings it all home. And so it's very exciting for me as a person who really enjoys a good story and good gameplay mechanics. Like, I can overlook bad camera if your story's great. You know, we've done it. I've talked about it before. You know, I prefer having a good camera, but man, if your story is solid and it's delivered with the right voice actors and the right timing, I don't give a shit about your camera. As long as it doesn't keep me from actually completing the game so I can get through the rest of the story, I could give two shits. That's because I'm a casual gamer. If I was a hardcore gamer, I'd be like, no, I want it all. I want great camera and great story.
I wouldn't even say that you're a hardcore gamer.
I'm not. I'm a casual.
No, I'm saying, but I would not say that that is something that would define a hardcore gamer.
I think if you're going to sit there and debate the camera angles.
The need to want everything does not make you a hardcore gamer. It makes you a jaded gamer.
I don't think so. I don't think that it makes you jaded just because you
want to. We are jaded motherfuckers right
now. Yeah, but I'm not a hardcore gamer.
I am.
Okay.
So hardcore gamers can be jaded, but not all jaded gamers are hardcore.
I would challenge you on that. I would say that you're not hardcore. Go ahead and ask me why.
Nope, don't want to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nope.
If you don't, I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah, I know. So just go right on.
When was the last game you played? And when?
Lollipop Chainsaw.
And when was the last time you played that game?
A month ago.
Not hardcore. Hardcore plays games every single day.
Wait, that's wrong. I played Theater Rhythm. Hold on. That was two weeks ago.
Hold on.
Still not hardcore.
Mobile,
though.
DS. Anyway, hardcore gamer is on console, is on PC every single day. Hardcore will sit there and will negate and debate frame rate with you. Camera support and angles.
I've done that.
And the hardware that it takes to really
do it. Nah, I haven't learned hardware yet.
That's hardcore. So not only just plays the game, but dissects every single aspect of it goes into it. I am not hardcore. I'm casual. I can talk about frame rate and why it's important. I can talk about camera angles and why they're important. But that's not what is the overriding thing for me on whether or not I have a good experience with the game. It is for hardcore. Because I play it every fucking day. Okay? If you were hardcore, you'd be at QuakeCon.
I would go to QuakeCon if I could afford it.
You gonna bring a machine? You gonna play?
I would play.
Yeah? Really? When was the last time you played any Quake game?
I would try to play.
That's it! Okay? You're not hardcore. You're definitely on the more hardcore end of casual gaming, but you're still a casual gamer. And there's no shame in that. If you're not picking it up every single day and putting it down and spending hours on it, you're not hardcore. And that's cool, because not everybody can be hardcore. Okay? I firmly believe that not everybody is meant to be hardcore. And that's cool. Okay, I'm a casual gamer. I embrace it. I pick up games when I can, I play them for as long as I can, and I enjoy them for as long as I can.
Okay.
Alright? Now, I pick them up more than, say, the average schmo walking down the street, but that still doesn't make me a hardcore gamer. Can I sit there and have a conversation with you about the evolution of video games?
Certain ones, your favorite ones.
Hell, just as video games as an industry.
Yes!
Hell yes! Does that make me hardcore? Nope, just makes me a nerd.
It makes you knowledgeable.
Okay, so, you know, I ultimately, here's the thing. Video games has gone mainstream, whether we want to admit it or not. It's gone mainstream.
It's entered a state of fandom.
Okay, and you want to know how I know it went mainstream? Because of the gymnast in the Olympics this week, the female gymnast, who had an entire score section of Zelda music in her floor routine.
Ha!
Okay.
Smart bitch.
Alright? That's how it's mainstream. When, during a floor routine at the Olympics, part of your music is from several different, medley of Zelda game theme music.
Zelda melody.
Okay, that's mainstream. When people pick up on it and recognize it, that's mainstream.
Someone should skate to Zelda music during
the Olympics. I'm sure somebody has. But anyway, and that's cool, because mainstream means it's been accepted. It's no longer, you know, that thing that those weird people do.
Oh, it's still the thing that weird people
do. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. It's still a thing that weird people gravitate towards. But it's not as far as, like, the majority.
We're not weird. We're unique.
No, we're mainstream. Gamers are mainstream.
Bleh.
What?
Bleh.
It's okay.
No.
It's okay.
No.
You don't, you're not abnormal anymore.
No.
We've changed the norms.
Fuck that.
Fuck you.
I reject it.
Adjust your glasses when you say that shit.
I reject it.
Asshole. So anyway.
Love you.
I love you too. So that was really cool. And then finally for me, the last little piece that I have is, you know, we're sitting here. It's August. September and October are literally right around the corner. One of the things that I've been really excited about, so much so that we're going to get cracking on the studio here pretty soon, is Dance Central 3. I'm really looking forward to it. Like, when I got to spend some time with it at E3, it was just fun. It was more Dance Central, and there's nothing wrong with just more Dance Central.
No.
Okay, but the assortment of music really was interesting to me, that you had more stuff that was, you know, specifically targeted to, you know, disco and 80s new wave and, oh yeah, a little bit of the 90s, a little bit of the camp, and then, of course, your, okay, you want to get down and think your street crew, like, here you go, here's your stuff. But they recently made an announcement that they were going to throw some K-pop into the mix.
And that's Korean pop music, for those who don't know.
And I was kind of both taken aback and, but at the same time, really excited about that because, you know, I should not have been surprised because it's harmonics that we're talking about here, okay? These guys have had some of the most innovative ideas around video games for a while, okay? Between, you know, I can't say enough awesome things about Frequency and Amplitude, okay?
Right.
All
right,
and then you moved into the whole Rock Band deal and all its iterations. We're still excited about Rock Band Blitz and... And then you got Dance Central thrown into the mix, where we're like, oh, motion-based games. And then Dance Central came out, and it was like, no, this is actually really challenging, and it's fun, and it's kind of exercising, and I really enjoy it. Damn. Really cool. And so it shouldn't have surprised me that as popular as K-pop is becoming... Here in the States, you know, half of, let me not exaggerate, a good portion of the videos that I see on my feed from my personal friends on Facebook.
Or your sister.
Or my sister. Or my, well, mom's not on Facebook, but I do see K-pop videos because of mom. Are from K-pop artists, and I'm discovering new ones and new songs and finding, you know, artists who are, you know, collaborating with American artists and have stuff coming out. Like, I was... sitting there, we were talking about stuff the other day, me and Mom, and Eshmon goes, yeah, well, you know, G-Dragon's gonna be doing a track with Ludacris. And I'm like, one, how do you know who G-Dragon is? Two, when is this track with Ludacris coming out? Three, will there be booties in it?
You know there could be booties in it. Well, jangling.
But my mom.
Our mom.
Well, at the time, I'm describing this, because it was just the two of us sitting in the room.
She's still our mom, even if I'm not in the room.
Fuck, fine. All right, so anyway, so our mom to be sitting there and talking about G-Dragon to me.
Especially when I introduced you to G-Dragon.
It's like, whoa? But they have some K-pop stuff, including one of my more favorite groups, 21, or 21, 21, depending upon which way you want to pronounce it, with I'm the Best. Which I'm not even gonna try to say any of that, but I love the song, and so I'm really curious to see what the routine is gonna be and get that sucker down like
pat. Maybe it's gonna have like a collaboration of like moves that the girls have done.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that was really interesting to me, you know, and just seeing some of the tracks, it was obvious that for some of the newer artists that, you know, were contributing songs, that they were pulling some of the moves
from the videos
that they did for the songs and then blending it with the choreography that the team came up with. So I'm really curious to see, you know, which elements they pull from the video and how they match those with choreography from the teams that they work with, because the teams that they work with to do choreography are predominantly U.S.-based dancers. So it's going to be really interesting to me to see that. So I'm very excited about the game, and that's, of course, another October game. That one comes out October 19th. So I'm just really excited, you know, when you start thinking about the lineup of songs. I mean, you've got, you know, stuff from LMFAO, you've got stuff from 50 Cent, you got, you know, the butt from EU, which is totally fun to do. Then you've got, you know, some of your disco stuff with, like, Vicky Sue Robinson with Turn the Beat Around and The Hustle from Van McCoy. And you're just like, damn, like, this actually seems like it's going to be one of those names that's going to be fun for anybody to pick up and play. But it also is going to fit into anybody's routine who's looking for something to get a little bit more active, you know, because they are going to have the calorie counter burner. So as you do routines, you'll be actually able to see for completing the routine how many calories you burn. So if you're looking for additional things to factor into your personal workout plan or just better health plan, you can actually follow along with that kind of stuff. So I think it's really cool. I'm so excited for this game. I haven't yet figured out exactly when I'm going to find the time to play it, but I'm really looking forward to to Dance Central 3 now.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we gotta work it out. I think that's all the stuff that's on my desk, because I really don't want to get into the Chick-fil-A thing.
Nope.
I think we've said all we need to do on the Chick-fil-A thing, in that we heart the gays and the lesbians. I'm making the international I love you sign, which is a heart with two hands, because I have... It's like a lot of love. But if that's what we're calling it a day with, and I think it pretty much is, because those are all my big guys. Voltron, Dishonored, Dance Central 3, Tomb Raider and the New Voice. You talked about Resident Evil 6. I mean, we talked about a lot of stuff
today. Loads of shit today.
We got even loads more shit coming up next week. So make sure that you subscribe to our podcast and you check us out on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can actually find, as soon as we put news out and make it available, our page and EGM Now, as we are an EGM Now partner. So that's egmnow.com/electricsisterhood, where you'll find our reviews and news available the moment that we create it. You can also check out some of the stuff that the entire team writes, and listen to our podcast on our site, electricsisterhood.com/podcast. You can get it on the site, or you can get it, well, a bunch of different ways.
Yep, you can
subscribe to us through iTunes using the podcast app.
Yep, we can do that.
You can get our podcast by searching the Microsoft Marketplace for Electric Sisterhood.
Yep.
But if you're not into doing the digital stuff to keep us on your mobiles,
then you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, you should look for the other shows that fly underneath our Pretty Little Banner.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that makes up the land of Esh. While we work hard to get brand new episodes of our podcast out to you on Mondays, for your other podcast needs, well, we got all kinds of stuff. On Tuesday, you can follow our show up with a brand new episode of the Boston Bash Brigade podcast, which is co-hosted by our homeboy King Baby Duck, where they are the we are the estrogen to their testosterone.
Preposterone!
Preposterone. That's preposterous. Or is that from posterous?
No, I'm referencing the Power Thrust video.
I don't watch
ridiculous
that.
Amounts of testosterone. Preposterone.
I haven't seen that.
Oh my god.
I feel pretty good about that. So you can check them out. They do sports, they do video games, they do indie music, they do theater, they do all kinds of stuff that we just frankly don't have enough time to do.
That's right, because we're going to talk about Kevin Smith when we see Kevin Smith.
We're going to talk about Kevin Smith, like, so much Kevin Smith
so
talk.
So much.
Then on Wednesday, for your nerd needs, your gadgets, your gears, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my.
There's the Geek Aggro podcast, which is held down by our homeboy Deuces Wild. For the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, there's all the stuff we write about on our website. Like I said, you can find it first on egmnow.com/electricsisterhood, but you can also check in with us on Facebook at facebook.com/landofesh. You can check out all the stuff that we talk about on Twitter by following everyone who makes up the Land of Esh. You can check out my list, twitter.com/ninjasista, and see the Land of Esh list that has everybody who contributes to make us what we are on there. You can follow our news and get updates on when we put out new articles and the like by following ESH News on Twitter. And, as far as being on the rest of the internet, I mean, we're pretty much everywhere, so there's almost no channel that you can't interact with us, except for Google+, because we're not really on it, because I'm like, damn, it's another social network, and we're already on, like, a bunch of social networks, or whatever, and it's like, ooh, so there's like, so that's what I got. Shit you digging this week, Panda!
The backing up song.
Oh, my.
Because backing up, backing up, backing up. 'Cause my daddy taught me good.
And ain't nobody got time for that.
What are you digging this week?
Converse sneakers.
What? You're always...
No, sometimes it's Astro Gaming.
True.
No, Converse came out with a new line of sneakers, and I was like, oh, it sucks that I'm broke right now.
You are so broke right seriously, now. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's really ridiculous. I was like, I could buy a taco.
And not 69 cents.
69-cent taco. Can't even have no sour creams on it.
Oh, that's... I can give you a quarter. I got a quarter.
Oh my god, you're like the bestest sister ever.
You could now have sour cream.
I cannot have sour cream. But no, seriously, I as you well know, I love Converse sneakers. And the new line is really cool. You can actually customize some of the DC flavored Chucks now. Oh. So you can make, you know, a more personalized Batman Chuck. Or Riddler, or a couple of other things. And they've also expanded their Product Red line, which donates to the Product Red campaign to fund AIDS research in Africa, which, you know, whenever I have a chance to support that and also get myself something, I do. So I really love the new line, and I'm looking for an excuse to be like, fuck it, I'm broke anyway, so might as well dig deeper in the hole, but I can't, but I want to. So I'm digging that. And also T-Fury. Like, I fucking love T-Fury.
I had an issue with them, a little one, but they resolved it.
Yay! So anyway, love T-Fury, love Converse. As always, I am Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We are out of here, people.
See you guys next week.
Next week!